Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. And from Kmart to Macy's to JCPenney, more and more stores are filing for bankruptcy or closing altogether. We're talking about a new retail reality this hour. Ohio-based retailers Big Lots, and more recently, Joann Fabrics and Craft, can be added to the list, closing hundreds of locations. Joining us now to talk about what these closings mean to Ohio is Columbus Business First reporter Dan Eaton. Welcome back to All Sides, Dan.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
So the last time you were on All Sides, we talked about Columbus-based retailer Big Lots, which had filed for bankruptcy. I think this was last September. Can you remind us what happened then and what has happened since then to Big Lots?
Sure. Big Lots, big historic Central Ohio-based retailer. You know, they filed for bankruptcy back in September. All they've done since is close hundreds of stores. They were kind of on that track. The initial plan was they had hoped to be acquired by a group that was also invested in some companies like Tom's Shoes. Mm-hmm. There was a belief that, you know, they would only have to close a few hundred stores. But as the fall kept going on, they just kept adding more and more stores to it. And then late last year, the deal they thought they had fell through. So a new buyer came in and bought them. A retail investment firm out of Boston called Gordon Brothers has acquired them, and they're keeping about 200 stores. So they went from about 1,400 stores to, you know, the hopes of keeping about 70% of those open, and now in a matter of months, there'll probably be about 200 Big Lots stores, and that'll be it. And they'll be run by a company out of North Carolina called Variety Wholesalers that owns the Roses brand. And would be who we would know here in this market. If there's a couple Roses discount
stores. I don't know the Roses brand,
There's only two of those here. Okay. They're in more southern markets, but that's the same company now will run the 200 remaining Big Lots stores.
Now, those 200 remaining Big Lots stores, are they mostly located everywhere? Or?
There's a little bit of a spread. You know, Big Lots used to be nationwide. 200, mm-hmm. they're not going to be quite as big. I think of the 200, 20, 25, 30 or so are in Ohio, and four of them will be in Central Ohio. But, you know, a year ago, there was about 17, 18 in Central Ohio. So that's going to go down to just four mm-hmm. stores here locally.
Are they going to keep the name Big Lots, or are they going to change that other name?
They are. They're going to keep the Big Lots brand on those Big Lots stores.
Okay. Yeah. So going from 1,400 down to 200, I mean, do you think, not that you can predict the future or no, but will Big Lots last? Or a year from now, will I have you on and they're all gone? Yeah.
You know, certainly, obviously, caveat that I can't predict the future. But I mean, they're cut. Down to the bone, the stores were allegedly profitable. You know, the previous Big Lots leadership said about 70% of the stores are profitable. So I would imagine the 200 that are staying are they're certainly the ones that the new owners are the most confident in continuing to survive.
So another Ohio-based retailer that more recently filed for bankruptcy and is now closing stores is Joann. I called it in the intro, I called it Joann Fabrics and Crafts because I just know it from my whole life as Joann Fabrics, right? That's the name I know.
Yep.
But they go by Joann now. So
absolutely.
I'll call them by their proper name.
I know it as Joann Fabric as well. Fabrics as well. They are completely going away. They mm-hmm. are they similar to Big Lots in the sense that they had hoped to have a buyer who would maybe rescue the business, but unlock like by Big Lots that did not transpire. So
no one wanted to buy Joann.
No one wanted to buy it to keep it running. It is getting acquired, but it's being acquired by someone that's liquidating the stores and shutting it down.
Interesting. So are they acquiring it for all the buildings, or are they acquiring it for all the stock, or?
I will be honest. I do not know. Certainly the profit they can turn for there are companies out there that are kind of liquidation specialists, right? That's what they do. They come into something and they make a profit off of, you know, selling it off. And I believe that is what is happening in this case, but they will have the real estate that they can then, this is what's happening with Big Lots is that those leases are being auctioned off to potential new operators. So that's that's an opportunity for the new owner to recoup some money as well.
Now, for Joann Fabrics, we were talking in the newsroom whenever they announced that they were closing, and we all were kind of lamenting just memories from childhood of going with our parents to pick out fabric because we were going to make the best skirt you ever saw, you know? So I don't know. Do you sometimes feel like some of these closures just, you know, hit close to home?
Yeah. Yeah. In particular, you know, another, you know, common factor you see from these is that they're older companies, right? I think that is sometimes part of the problem. They're an older real estate. They're an older business model. And that probably contributes to the struggles that they're having now. But being an older company, you know, we're nostalgic. Mm-hmm. For it, you know, a lot of us of certain ages, you know, grew up going to the Big Lots for the treasure hunt where you'd maybe find some random toy
for like $2 or $5.
Exactly. Or Joann for whatever craft you're working on.
And Joann tried to like change their model. As I talked about, they're not Joann Fabrics anymore. Then they were Joann Fabrics and Crafts. Then they're just Joann. But they were trying to, I'm thinking of the big store at up on Polaris Parkway, I believe, where it's huge and it has like rooms where you can take classes and you can have like a birthday party there. I mean, they really were trying to change their model and turn into a teaching establishment too. That just didn't work, or was that that upgrade too expensive?
You know what? It could be that. It could be, and you know, if you follow retail the last 10 years, you know, people have said that going more hands-on, more experiential is what people want. So so the logic of them doing that makes a lot of sense. I wonder if it's just people don't associate that with Joann, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't look for that type of experience from Joann. They didn't want that type of experience from Joann. But it's one of those where you feel bad for them as an observer, because this is what the experts were telling them they should probably do to move on into the future. It didn't work.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about a new retail reality where more and more stores are closing, and specifically how that impacts Ohio and Central Ohio, with Columbus Business First reporter Dan Eaton. So let's talk a little bit more about this idea of filing for bankruptcy. So because both of these stores, they file for bankruptcy. That's a way they're allowed to reorganize, try to restructure their debt. But it just anecdotally, it seems to me like they're not – that's not working as, or like it's not working.
Sure. Well, you know, I guess you could argue, I think yes, it hasn't worked. You know, Big Lots had a plan. That plan didn't come together. I think their initial plan would have been a much more pleasant bankruptcy, where they would have had an exit. You know, which happens. You know, bankruptcy isn't it's not a good sign, but it's not a death knell for businesses. You know, you can't come out of bankruptcy. You know, hopefully, usually with new ownerships or new leaders, and you know, maybe in a stronger position because you can get rid of debts and some other stuff you can get off the books. But that didn't transpire for Big Lots, and it still lives on. But you know that the executives are all going to be gone in a couple of months. The name will still be on stores, but you know, the headquarters will be gone. So it's not really. It's not the Big Lots we know.
Right? Now, we're quick to blame online shopping for all of this. So is that the reason more and more brick and mortar stores are not around, is because of more and more online shopping?
Yeah, I think it's certainly a factor. It'd be naive to think that it's not. But there are other, you know, some of the more traditional, you know, Walmart is still very strong, you know, and if you're a company like Big Lots, you know, that's a competitor. And even as big as Big Lots is, it's not nearly as big as Walmart. So when you try to you know, when you try to compete or try to get those customers for that general merchandise you have, whether it's food or toys or household goods, you know, it's hard to beat Walmart on those prices as well. So it's not just online. There's still some strong retailers out there that are hard to compete against.
Mm-hmm. And another Ohio-based company that's going out of business is a furniture brand called American Freight. Can you tell us about this company?
Yeah. You know, furniture, this was also a Big Lots problem, is that during the pandemic, everybody was stuck at home, and they invested in their homes. They bought new furniture. Big Lots actually saw record sales. Joann saw sales.
Everyone was crafting. Size.
Yeah, right.
At the time.
So everyone was home. And what happened in the furniture industry is everybody bought furniture, and then they didn't need furniture anymore.
They bought too much.
I'm probably oversimplifying, but I remember the last time I was on talking about Big Lots, I had seen a statistic where the 100 largest furniture retailers in this would have been 2023. I don't know the 2024 figure, but you know, 80 out of the 100 top furniture retailers saw sales fall because, you know, people had invested during the pandemic and they weren't buying, you know, couches and love seats and beds at the rate that they were. And I think American Freight was hit directly with that same problem. And in their case, they only did furniture, you know, Big Lots at least, you know, has some other product categories that they can sell. But you know, it's tough out there for furniture retailers.
I'm wondering how now these closures compares to, I can remember years ago being shocked when Sears and Circuit mm-hmm. City went out of business. Like I grew up shopping all of my school clothes mm-hmm. at Sears. I had a Circuit City really close to my house and I was just like, how can they not make it? Now that seems naive, you know, especially Circuit City. No offense, Circuit City. Mm-hmm. Sorry. But like, how does that compare to now? Is it happening more quickly or are we just hearing about it more?
I don't know that it's happening more quickly. I think we're just seeing sort of a continuation of that. You know, I think some of the same factors that hit a Circuit City are hitting, you know, an American Freight or a Joann or a Big Lots. It's just been delayed. You know, but I think some of the, you know, older real estate, people looking elsewhere to buy that merchandise, you know, those are the same factors that are hitting retailers today. It's just, you know, different segments of the of merchandise.
I was probably one of the last people to have an appliance repaired by Sears because I am my father's daughter and I called Sears to have my refrigerator fixed. Right. So another Ohio based company, a clothing retailer, Express, which has been a mall favorite, is another Ohio company filing for Chapter 11 within the past year. Mm-hmm. Is this because of the demise of some shopping malls? What's happening with Express? Yeah.
Yep. That's another trend that's been, you know, a decade plus where people don't go to the mall or look to the mall the same way we used to, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
There's a lot more online shopping with apparel, and some retailers have adjusted well to that and some have struggled. You know, Express is an example of one that has struggled. But, you know, you can also look around town at Abercrombie & Fitch, which is similar in a lot of ways, and they're having some of their best years ever right now. Mm. So that's, they're selling to some similar demographics, but they're, you know, making it work. Whereas Express is struggling to resonate with their customers.
I'm going to ask you why, and you're going to say, I don't
know.
Yeah.
Well, I can explain a little bit of it. I do think there's an understanding of the customer that Abercrombie & Fitch has. Mm-hmm. They're getting cool partnerships with like the mm-hmm. White Lotus and they did a Super Bowl promotion because they have some sports affiliations, mm-hmm. Sports league affiliations. And they've been very active on TikTok and things like that, and they've caught on with the consumer, and Express just hasn't been able to break through in the same way.
Now, Express has a portfolio that includes Bonobos mm-hmm. and or is it Bonobos?
Bonobos.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I told my producer I was going to do that. Because I wanted to not say it like the monkey, but it is like the monkey.
It
Bonobos.
Is like the monkey.
We even had a whole conversation about not saying it wrong. Okay. Well, anyway, mm-hmm. Express's portfolio, it also includes Up West. Mm-hmm. Will they shed these other products?
Maybe not, because those brands, interestingly enough, started online. So they're almost reversed engineered into stores. So the fact that brick and mortar stores didn't catch on for them isn't necessarily surprising, because the customers they did have probably weren't looking for that physical experience because they were already buying Bonobos online. So those, you know, I would imagine those brands could have, extended life that even Express maybe doesn't have. Now, they're much smaller than Express, but.
Is that, Express acquired them, but they didn't change their name to Express. So it's like they're keeping the brand separate.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And Express, they created Up West. They acquired Bonobos. And, you know, it's one of those, the back office is all kind of the same on that, but they're different brands, you know, in the public's eye.
Now, another, this is not a retail store, but it's a restaurant chain mm-hmm. that closed, but it is local and, you know, people might miss it, but Melt Bar and Grilled, mm-hmm. They filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Does this relate to restaurants still having a hard time coming back after the pandemic?
Yeah, I think the big issue you see with restaurants is that the cost of everything is up, and we all feel that as consumers because the cost of living, right? We feel that in our own pockets. And if you're a restaurant operator, you know, labor is more expensive, food is more expensive, your rent and utilities are more expensive, and you can't raise prices at the rate that your costs are going up. So your margin's just shrinking if you're in a restaurant, particularly if you're an independent or a smaller restaurant where you don't have the economies of scale to sort of spread expenses across a bunch of locations. And Melt had 10 locations. That's bigger than, you know, a lot of folks, but that's still not very big.
Yeah, that's true. So not talking about the restaurants, but talking more about the stores, do you think that this is an opportunity for local businesses? Is there like local craft stores, local fabric stores, are they going to take the place where for those people who liked shopping for the fabrics at Joann's?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think if you are a local or independent store operator, there's an opportunity there to hopefully find some customers and build like a real, you know, connection, because those are, whether you're big or small, a lot of the companies that are succeeding are ones that, you know, have really customers, dedicated customers to you. You know, whether again you're just one shop or a larger brand, you have you know, a committed person who's going to come in and spend with you and want to spend time with you. So that, you know, I would imagine, particularly with crafting, that's there's a real opportunity there because it's such a hands-on, interactive thing. So, you know, maybe there's a good opportunity for some local entrepreneurs out there.
Yeah, and I don't expect a local store to be exactly like a Big Lots, but you can make up for Big Lots by finding a local toy store and then finding a local furniture store. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anything Big Lots sold, you can find at other places. You know, it's just a matter of where you want to go and how much you want to pay.
Well, I want to say thank you to Columbus Business First reporter Dan Eaton. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And coming up, we're going to talk about how this new retail reality could impact the economy. And that's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Retail is the nation's largest private sector employer, according to the National Retail Federation. Retail supports more than one in four jobs in the United States and contributes more than $5 trillion to the GDP. But with more and more companies closing their doors, what will happen to the workers? Here to talk with us about this new retail reality and how it could impact the economy is Matthew Rosu, Dean and Professor of Economics at Susquehanna University. Welcome to All Sides, Matthew.
Thank you for having me.
So as an economics professor, whenever you're talking to your students about these closings, how do you view all of these retail chains closing their doors?
So as many would say, economists are often accused of talking about both sides. There's a famous joke about a president wanting a one-armed economist, because we'd say on the one hand this, and on the other hand, it often depends. Some closures are healthy for the economy, and we want them. We want, in a market economy, we want newer, more innovative businesses to come in, and we don't wish necessarily failure on any businesses, but the businesses that aren't as efficient are going to end up failing. And so from that perspective, this is actually good and healthy in an economy. That doesn't mean, of course, that there's not pain associated with this. And especially in the areas that could be hit harder from a particular closure, whether it's a headquarters, or maybe you have a small town that has, you know, Joann's is what's in the news right now, but has a Joann's, and maybe it supports, you know, 25 people who are working there or some number. So there's certainly overall, you know, the fact that newer businesses come out, find more innovative ways to sell either better products or the same products for lower prices is a good thing. But the short-term pain on this certainly shouldn't be minimized. And it can really disrupt the economy in the short term in places.
Now, I said in the introduction that more than one in four jobs in the United States is retail. If all of these stores close, the Joann's, the Big Lots, you know, Macy's, Kmart's, are there other retail jobs for these same people to find?
There likely would be. So could the number of retail jobs shift just slightly? Yes, it could. But usually when a place like a Joann's would close, or, you know, or a Big Lots, or thinking back to Toys R Us or Blockbuster Video, or, you know, whatever the shop is that's going out of business, other shops incrementally start to sell a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So if Joann's is out of business, what places are going to start to sell maybe a little bit more? Maybe there's a place like a Michael's or a Hobby Lobby that really picks up a lot of the slack, but it's probably going to be a little bit a customer who might have gone into Joann's, maybe gets one thing from Amazon or something else from Walmart. And all of those places cumulatively likely will be hiring pretty much just as many people. Where it can cause disruption in the economy and issues with unemployment is when you have an area that's just lost a lot of particular jobs. That can cause a disruption. People can become unemployed. It could tick up the unemployment rate within a certain area. For a nation, I don't expect much of an impact on the one closure.
Yeah. So you're saying, like, if Joann's headquarters, I don't know how many people worked at Joann's headquarters, but that could impact the town where it was located, because obviously it had humans not working in actual stores, but running the business.
Yeah. Yeah. And that those could be actually probably the biggest and hardest hit areas. The, you know, individuals who are out of a job. And then there's what you think of as a multiplying effect from either gains in employment or losses in employment. If you suddenly had an area that had 1,000 people who are now out of a job, mm-hmm. well, you know, there's unemployment insurance, which can help make up a little bit of the money difference. But you have a number of households that now have less money. And of course, not only are they worse off, but the amount that they can comfortably spend in the area has also dropped, which means others who weren't necessarily working at Joann's or whatever place closed down might actually feel a little bit of a pain from this as well in terms of fewer sales, fewer customers.
Now, you said that some closings are healthy. The stores that are just not being run efficiently closing, that's healthy for the economy. What do these closings, because it seems like there's been a lot in the past year. What does it say about the national economy?
I don't know enough right now on whether we could say, are the closings we've seen part of an increase in closings, you know, or a decrease in overall consumer demand? If that's the case, that's actually poses a problem for the economy, right? That would be a problem that we would, you know, lower demand, lower consumption. We would expect to fewer items than to be produced, lower gross domestic product. That's the kind of thing that could lead into a recession. I don't know if, you know, you hear of these businesses that have closed recently and they make news because, you know, we've all shopped at these places. Mm-hmm. And it's sad. And you think about this and there's probably a bit of nostalgia on some of the places that people have gone into. But you know, each year there will be closings like this. And in terms of the overall economy, it, you know, as long as this number isn't too high and overall consumer demand isn't dropping, probably not too bad of a thing for the economy. And in fact, could actually be healthy if it's more efficient producers that are selling products.
Do you, whenever a company files for bankruptcy as opposed to closing, do you, I was talking with the last guest and saying, I feel like these bankruptcies, it's not working. So they file for bankruptcy, they try to reorganize, and they end up closing a lot anyway. Does that have an impact, the bankruptcy proceedings on the national economy?
It's so few overall relative to the national economy that it probably doesn't have too big of an impact. Mm-hmm. Once again, the impact would likely be more felt on a local level. But nationally, it's not that many places, it's not that much of the workforce that's subject to any of these firms that are declaring bankruptcy at any one period of time. I mean, I doubt it's probably fewer than one in one in 1,000, one in 5,000 people would be working for a place that's just declared bankruptcy. So that's probably not too big of an impact. I think the bigger impact, the real pain is in the areas that have just lost stores. And then you, all of a sudden you have this number of people. And yes, there are jobs, but I tell my students this all the time. Getting a job is terrible. Yeah. It's not fun. It's hard work. It's being rejected a lot, right? I mean, you're throwing in applications. That's where I really think the pain from this would come into play.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit, the idea of getting a job. Do you tell your students not to go into retail? Is that because it's hard?
No. I don't know that I'd advise that. I think there's still plenty of jobs. But, you know, different sectors of the economy can, you know, go through different ebbs and flows. I remember talking to somebody about, 2 years ago or so, and they switched out of the financial services industry during, you know, after the Great Recession, figuring, okay, that's not safe. It was too stressful. Mm-hmm. And they went into tourism industry, figuring, okay, people are always going to travel. This will be safe. I never have to worry about being out of a job. And then, of course, COVID hits and they're unemployed again. And, you know, these things can ebb and flow in terms of where do you see the lowest unemployment rates. The key thing I would tell my students, or really any workers, regardless of the industry that you go into, do your best to try to gain as many skills as you can, right? If you have good customer service skills, that could work for retail, but that could also, you know, maybe work for business to business. It could work for sales. There's a number of other areas that could work.
That story you just told reminds me of the two-handed economist, because, like, on the one hand, going into tourism makes sense because there's people always travel. On the other hand, yeah, there's a pandemic that no one predicted, right?
Yeah, that was just brutal. Hopefully, as we think back to the Spanish flu, that was a once in 100 year, maybe so the only time in our life.
None of us have to deal with it again. Just our great grandkids. Yeah. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about how the new retail reality could affect the economy with Matthew Rosu, professor of economics at Susquehanna University. So you mentioned, you know, that getting a job is hard, and all these You talked about, like, the sense of loss of losing the store. You know, if you went to Joann's every weekend to buy a craft, there's a sense of loss. Yeah. But then now there's, like, all these giant empty buildings, too.
That's a transition point, too. And that is actually something pretty fascinating to think about, what will happen with the economy and what will we see moving forward. Nationally, and even in my area, certainly, malls are not as frequented as they used to be. Mm-hmm. And so what do you do with the space in the malls? Where I'm at, we've actually seen some doctor's offices move in there. We've seen mm-hmm. some places trying to, can we convert any of these places into apartments where people could live here and kind of have mm-hmm. mixed use? But certainly there is an issue with thinking about what will be done with the commercial real estate. And there's been a lot of worries about commercial real estate, especially since COVID. And then the issues of what will be the percentage of people that eventually move back and return to work in an office instead of online work? Will as much commercial space be needed? Will that be converted into residential space or something else? Those are interesting questions that I think will be sorted out over the next few years as we start to get back to what economists would call an equilibrium in terms of what percentage of people are working from home, or I guess what percentage of time on average would an individual work not in their office setting.
From an economics perspective, how much shift have you seen in just everyone is shopping online as opposed to going into these brick and mortar stores? I'm sure that's something that is, you know, going to continue to be studied, because a lot of these places even tried to pivot to be like, we're online now too, right? And to varying degrees of success. So what about the whole, you know, all these stores closing, and is it online's fault?
I think the answer is probably yes to the very last question. It is, a lot of this would be the fault of online retailers, and the fact that, you know, getting up, getting out, depending how far the place is, it's a hassle. Whereas you could hop onto your computer and Within about a minute, you could order an item and then the item is shipped directly to you. That certainly is having an impact. We've seen some of the brick and mortar retailers that have done a little bit better have really shifted and invested in their online presence. Walmart being a key one, but you know, the other places like Target and Best Buy and places that are big enough to have the infrastructure have really started to try to invest to capture online sales as well as, you know, as well as having their brick and mortar presence.
Right. And, you know, in addition to the idea of, shopping online, I wanted to talk a little bit about going to local businesses. So, I mean, like a small local business isn't going to take the spot of, you know, a big Joann's that had, you know, thousands of square feet. But do you think that these national closures are going to be good for some local businesses?
Sure. Sure. And it depends exactly on what the store closure is, what Joann's was, you know, for. So Joann's, could you expect perhaps some... a local craft store? I mean, how many local craft stores are there? It's a key question. But could there be somebody who, instead of perhaps spending their money at Joann's to buy something, to craft a project, maybe spends money with a local artist that either, you know, has a building or doesn't have a building? There's certainly a tension between the major online retailers who might have, you know, dozens or hundreds of locations across the country and local retailers. And anytime if you would see a national retailer go out of business, you would expect some of that business to spill over into many other firms, many other businesses. And some of that would be the local businesses.
Yeah. And for the local businesses, I mean, a local business might employ like a handful of people as opposed to a bigger store like Big Lots that has to have a lot more employees to keep it running all of those hours. So some of the retail jobs could go local, but probably not all of them. Right.
Correct. Yeah. It's in terms of the jobs, if maybe it's out there and I just don't know this, but you know, you could think of like flow charts and okay, there were, let's say it's 20 people from a local Joann's store who now, you know, have to look for work and find new opportunities. Where are they going? My guess is others, you know, you might find one person who winds up at a Target or two people who end up at a Walmart and one person who ends up in just a completely unrelated industry you didn't even think about. You know, maybe they went to work, you know, selling insurance or something. You know, the flow chart on where the individuals would go, it's very unlikely that a high percentage of them would end up even in the same type of establishment. I mean, there are only so many brick and mortar shops that are kind of comparable to Joann's that they could really end up going all over into many different businesses or lines of work.
But as you said earlier, getting a job is hard. So that does, it's, you know, that finding that new job, hopefully you can find it in a place that also isn't going to end up having to make a big change.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you know, thinking about the people who are going to lose their jobs or who have lost their jobs, so thoughts are with them. That's just never, it's never a fun thing to deal with. So, you know, and it's painful and hopefully new opportunities are out there. The unemployment rate in the U.S. is about 4%. It's historically, it's pretty good, right? Out of every 25 people right now who want a job in the United States, 24 of them have one. So the economy is reasonably healthy. We've seen lower unemployment rates, but not that much lower over a longer period of time. So there should be some good opportunities for those who are looking for work.
Well, Dean and Professor of Economics at Susquehanna University, Matthew Rosu, is going to stay with us for the next segment, and we're going to shift our conversation a little bit away from retail and more into those jobs that he just mentioned, especially how we're seeing so many government employees looking like they're going to be losing their jobs. We'll talk about that when All Sides continues. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm Amy Jurevich. We've been talking about the new retail reality, with big box stores like Party City, Big Lots, and Joann's going out of business, in addition to restaurants like TGI Fridays and Red Lobster having to file for bankruptcy. But not only are people who work in all of those locations losing their jobs, we're also seeing now government employees being fired or given the opportunity for early retirement. We're talking about the economy with Matthew Rosu, Dean and Professor of Economics at Susquehanna University. Matthew, thanks for staying with us.
Oh, thank you again.
So you mentioned the unemployment rate right now. It might look different in about a month, but what are your thoughts whenever you hear all of these things at the federal level with the downsizing of the government and having every day we hear of a new group of federal employees who are losing their jobs? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, the question that I have is similar to the bit of the framing we had on the store closures, is I'm not yet certain how many numbers were, like the numbers we're talking about in terms of the number of layoffs. If we're talking in the, you know, thousands, which thousands is a big number, but, you know, in terms of the national economy, that's not going to make much of a dent. Now, regionally, could it have a big impact, especially from in the Washington, D.C. area? I would suspect so. I would suspect it would have a bigger impact there. If we're talking tens of thousands or, you know, 100,000 workers, that all of a sudden is getting to numbers that could see the unemployment rate inch up when, you know, right now it is at 4%. Could we see this go higher because of some of these layoffs? I would suspect we could see it go up, but the level and how much, I just don't quite know yet.
Now, you mentioned earlier, you know, that some of the store closures that we talked about are healthy for the economy. And I mean, that is what the Trump administration is saying, that this is going to be healthy for the federal government because there are too many federal employees. There's a lot of waste and bloat in the federal government. So do you think that in the big picture, that could be true, that we're going to find that maybe we didn't need as many federal employees as we had?
So it's tough for me to say without being in there. Do I believe there is some waste? I would think everybody kind of does. And, you know, Donald Trump has a way of politicizing everything. But I think both Republicans and Democrats in the past administrations have acknowledged, look, there, you know, how can we make government as efficient as possible? And there could be some waste. What's the extent of it? That's a question I don't know the answer to.
Right.
In theory, could this all be very good for the efficiency of the economy? Yeah, it could. I mean, the problem, of course, you run into is it's not easy to go ahead and do this, and there's not a clean way to go about it. And once upon a time, I had an interview at a government agency, and boy, there were just so many great people there that I met. But I noticed as I walked through, there were some doors that were closed, and there were they didn't even want me to meet the people. And like, this was at a place where you kind of knew the names of people and I never heard of them, right? And in theory, the people who are most productive aren't necessarily the ones who are safest from getting let go. I know somebody who got let go was just super productive in their particular role and just an absolute superstar, but was on a probationary period. So that was the person who got let go. And that's a bit of a roadblock, I would think, if you do believe that these layoffs could actually lead to more efficiency. It's tough to, you know, you're not dealing with like a surgeon's scalpel, like surgeon's knife. You're dealing with like a pickaxe if you're trying to do this, and you're not able to surgically remove perhaps the individuals who aren't as efficient or doing great work. That's a big obstacle, in my opinion.
And I guess it still remains to be seen because we're not, as you said, we're not sure how many people have lost their jobs and or how many will lose their jobs or if they'll find other jobs. Because I'm sure if you
let go the 10 most efficient people in the department, then suddenly the department is inefficient, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that certainly could be problematic. Mm-hmm. So we're a bit in a wait and see pattern on this, mm-hmm. to see what exactly happens, what is legal to accomplish.
Yeah.
Like what can the president accomplish and what can they not accomplish, right? And we've had some judges rule come in and say, wait, you know, the president doesn't get to unilaterally do that. And you know, to be bipartisan in nature, about a year ago or so, judges came in and said no to President Biden, saying you can't unilaterally say people's student loans are, they don't have to pay them back, right?
Right.
That's, you know, Congress set those laws. President doesn't get to do some of these things. So I think there's some time as figuring out what will actually end up happening in these cases.
Now, everyone always wants an economist to predict the future. So I'll ask you, this is you at me asking you to predict the future. Do you think that a loss of a lot of federal jobs will have a ripple effect, such as lower consumer spending? Maybe not even just federal jobs. I mean, all of these brick and mortar stores closing, but then also add in the federal jobs. Are we going to see lower consumer spending?
So it depends a bit on the level. Mm-hmm. So government spending is one component of gross domestic product. And if government spending drops, that by definition drops our GDP, the output that the economy produces. Now, there is the question of, is what the government produces as efficient as what's produced for consumption? Mm-hmm. That's a pretty fair question. And I would think almost by default, it's probably no, because as individuals, when we're spending our money, we know we're going to spend our money on the thing that's the most important to us right now, whether that's, hey, we need to pay the rent, or hey, I have a spare $100 and this is how I want to spend that spare $100 this month. The government doesn't have that constraint, but purely by definition, these are government workers and this is government spending, and that is a component of gross domestic product. So that drops. And then, of course, same as with the brick and mortar stores, if you have individuals who were making decent incomes and now all of a sudden are unemployed, at least for the interim period where, you know, maybe some will retire, but let's say others are going to be looking for jobs, and yeah, they might get a little bit of unemployment insurance, so they're getting some money coming in, but the amount of money these laid off workers will be spending should be quite a bit lower. We would expect that to be lower, and so that could again ripple through the economy. And that's where you could have a little bit of a fear. Will this cycle into something worse? And, you know, we don't want it to. Don't want it to become a recession, but could that happen? Well, yeah, it could happen.
I think about the DC area and how expensive it is. And if you work and you bought a giant house in DC and you lose your job, that's what I was like. I see like a problem coming with people being able to afford these houses they have in DC if they can't find another job.
Yes, if the number of government jobs drops, and let's say drops permanently,
yeah,
you know, by picking a number, 6%. Let's say the total number cut is 6%. That's a huge hit for the Washington D.C. area, and it actually could have a ripple effect beyond just the unemployment there, because not everybody who has lost their jobs we'll get a job again in Washington, right? There's fewer government jobs. Does that mean there would be fewer jobs for, say, the lobbyists or the support folks around the government? I would suspect yes. Mm-hmm. I don't really know. But if that happens, you could actually see a little bit of exodus from the Washington, D.C. area. So beyond that, if somebody's like, hey, I need to move to St. Louis or Columbus or, mm-hmm. you know, or wherever it is that they're going, is it going to be tougher to sell the house at the same time? I would suspect so. That area in particular, while maybe the rest of the country won't be in a recession, right? If there's mm-hmm. a big hit, you could see this area, you know, Washington, D.C. area being hit much harder. And while we don't define recessions by a city, basically, we would think that city would be in a recession.
Right. And you joked in saying the people in D.C. will come and move to Columbus. You know, we'll take them if they know how to work at a data center, because that's what Columbus is building left and right. Right. So yeah. there's that skill set issue. If you you mentioned it much earlier, where it's important that people have a lot of different skills whenever you're looking for a job. So that could also have an impact on the federal workers trying to find another job if they have spent the past 15 years doing the same thing. Right.
Yes. And so I'll go into my econ professor mode, right?
Oh,
we talk about
do,
three
yes.
types of unemployment yeah. when we teach in macroeconomics. There's cyclical. So if there's a cycle in the economy, you know, we're going to ebb and flow. And if you're in a recession and you've lost your job pretty much because the whole economy is doing poorly, we think of that as cyclical unemployment. There's then frictional unemployment, which is when you're looking for a job, maybe you've gotten fired, maybe you worked at a Big Lots and they went out of business and you're looking for a new job, and it's tough to just get a job the next day. Mm-hmm. There are frictions in the economy. Some of the unemployment that might happen from government workers, people will be frictionally unemployed because they have skills for other jobs in maybe even about the same pay, maybe even more pay. Some of the workers, though, if you've been in the government and you know specific government processes well, could be into this third category, which is kind of the ugly category to think about. It's called structural unemployment. And that would be an individual has skills, but not necessarily for the jobs that are available anymore. Those are the individuals that it's really going to be the scariest for. If somebody is a whiz with data analytics, I'm not worried about them finding a job right now. But if it's on perhaps a specific government agency that's being cut quite a bit, that could actually be a bit more problematic and concerning for those individuals.
And another aspect of all of the changes of the federal government is the idea that a lot of federal grants are being suspended. They're being cut completely. And that has a trickle down effect to each different state. I mean, I know we're seeing some hospitals here in Central Ohio who do a lot of research. That research is dependent on federal grants. So there could be that trickle down effect of, I mean, these researchers will probably still have jobs. Maybe it depends on, I guess, what the federal grant was paying for. But we could see just like random losses of jobs. Does that make sense?
Yeah. If, the government spending on, if a government was giving, let's say, $1 billion, I'm just making a number up, I'm not sure if it's more or less, $1 billion to Ohio State. I'm sure it has to be less than that, but we'll say it was $1 billion, and that gets cut to $950 million. Well, that's $50 million less. Now, you know, Ohio State University is a big institution, but still $50 million, that has an impact. So there could be issues there, especially in the shorter run. In the longer run, the arguments will come, like, this is deficit spending already. You know, individuals, this is where the debates really should be happening on our politicians. Unfortunately, there's not much of a debate on either side on really cutting the deficits. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like the spending now versus the spending later, these are pretty valid arguments that I wish more politicians would start to engage in terms of where the national debt is at, how much money the U.S. is paying just on the interest for the debt each year. That's kind of the flip side on making these cuts. I'm being the classical economist with multiple hands, because then on the flip side, though, if you're going to make these cuts, there have been some references to then, well, let's give a tax rebate to consumers. Well, if you're trying to make government spending cuts to balance the budget, giving a tax rebate's not going to end up helping in terms of and balancing the budget when we're running big deficits.
You know, that leads me into another question, because as an economist, what if they were to come ask you, what would you like to see the federal government do to stabilize the economy? What do you think is an action that does need to be taken?
So I actually think, you know, like the idea that there's a look at what jobs are good and what aren't, I think that's good. How it's been run, right? Like, I can't comment. I mean, you know, that's a whole lot trickier. If we want to, we were going to have to address entitlement spending in this country. Social Security and Medicare spending will have to be addressed. And one of a couple of things is going to have to happen. Either the amount that's spent on Social Security and Medicare is going to have to fall, or the taxes for those will have to increase. One of those things will have to happen. There's not really any other solution there. And in order to balance the budget, that has to be part of the equation. And it doesn't mean like everybody on Social Security is getting a 10% cut. Politicians need votes. Older people vote. There's no way that would happen. But in terms of maybe like the cost of living, instead of going up by the full inflation rate, it goes up by the inflation rate minus 0.5 or something like that over time. Or the minimum retirement age is raised from 67 to 68. And the early retirement age is raised from 62 to 63 to receive Social Security. Some of those things have to be on the table. Voters don't really want to hear that. I mean, and because mm-hmm. it's not fun to think about. And because voters don't want to hear that, politicians don't want to talk about it. And that's a bad cycle. So I would encourage our voters to start taking this seriously and realize these things have to happen, and vote for politicians who will be grown-ups and start to talk about the issue of Social Security and Medicare.
All right. Well, when the politicians talk like grown-ups, we'll have you back. So, thank you.
Well,
that was...
I'm sorry. This is my last time on the episode.
Thank you to Matthew Rosu, Dean and Professor of Economics at Susquehanna University. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you again. Appreciate it.
This has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.